Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
It's about that time. Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am so excited to be here. I am just one of the hosts, Matthew Rushing. But of course, I don't do this alone. With me, as she is every single week, my dedicated and wonderful co-host, Drea Kaufman.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You know what? Doing pretty well. We usually record on Wednesdays, and like it definitely feels like a hump day. Like I'm at the top of the hill, and I'm waiting for it to go down. You know. I guess everybody can tell as what kind of week this has been. But it's also kind of fun because we're really getting to the end of this book, and we've definitely reached the downhill for this book because we're just going to start getting answers from here on out. And that is always really exciting. This is the part of every Harry Potter book where you didn't put it down until you were done. But we're going chapter by chapter, so.
Actually, I feel like for this podcast, we should just not record and just read the 7 pages that this chapter was. I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that. But yeah, it was, I think she's meant to include some strong emphasis here on what she's trying to make the focal point. Like it's supposed to be the dramatic reveal, which I don't know. And I would love to know from our readers. And I think I've asked this before in other books. I'm thinking back to the very first one, actually. If anyone saw this reveal coming, because it felt so obvious to me, maybe not the manner in which it happens. I don't think that was predictable, but I think the climax of this chapter was inevitable, and I'm curious to see, especially some of our first-time readers, if they saw that coming. I don't know how you'd continue on with the series without this happening, so it was sort of it had to happen eventually, and that's not to say that I didn't enjoy it. I wonder, it felt a little anticlimactic for me because, well, he had to come back and I knew he was going to come back. And
spoiler alert, we haven't gotten to that part of the chapter yet.
It's 6 pages, man. 6.5. But you know, it's very thematic in the way she does it, but I'm curious if anyone else saw it coming, or if anyone was like, oh my gosh, no, that's what it was, because I definitely wasn't, and I don't ever remember being caught
off guard. If anybody would have ever felt like that, just because I think you put it succinctly, it is inevitable that that would happen. You know, I mean, from the very first, you know, part of book one, you get the feeling like, okay, this is going to be a thing. So it's just a matter of how. And then the how of this chapter is what is so like freaky, scary, creepy, you know, like it.
Scintillating.
Yeah. So, well, before we completely just derail ourselves and forget, you can find us all over the place. So, you know, Owl Post is anywhere you get your podcasts, but if you are listening to us over on Apple Podcasts or have access to iTunes, hit us up with a star rating review and let people know what you think about this show and help other people find the show. And then we take that review and we'll read it on the show and thank you for your either kind words or your words of criticism or whatever you have to say about the show. We'll let people know what you thought. So you can also find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. So make sure you follow us and like us on both of those places. Interact with Drea and I in both of those places. Make sure you use the hashtag OwlPost as well on Twitter. Owl Post news. I know Drea doesn't watch trailers, but we did get the brand new Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald trailer. And all I'm going to say is, dang, look good. So that's all I'll say.
I know, I'm sorry I'm ruining it for everyone, but yeah. I never watch them. So.
Drea's not a trailer person.
Nope,
and she doesn't live in a trailer in literal life either. So, you know, she is anti-trailer. So just
I'm
kidding.
I'm not anti-trailer.
I'm just teasing you.
I just abstain from trailers.
And then, last but not least, you can find us over on the web at thenerdparty.com. And If you want to send us an email, it's at thenerdparty.com/contact, and then just choose a show and choose Owl Post. So the beginning of this chapter, number 32, as we mentioned, it's short, flesh, blood, and bone. But I think it's really interesting the way that she sets it up, because, you know, Harry and Cedric have no idea what is happening. And one of the things that kind of, I was wondering about this line, because there's this line where Cedric says, "Wands out, do you reckon?" And Harry says, "Yes." And then he's glad that Cedric made the suggestion rather than him. Why do you think that is?
Okay, so I instantly knew what I think she meant, or at least what it meant to me. This whole time, Harry's been in this contest with Cedric and Fleur and Crum, right? And he is several years too young. He's several years too inexperienced. He knows it's dangerous. And he's done everything he can to not let that show that he's afraid and underqualified. Like, he has had to play the part. So for him to be afraid and him to know that Cedric is also, like, kind of afraid right now, it makes him feel like, okay, I'm not alone. It's not because of all these other things that I'm afraid of. I'm not young. I'm not, you know, like, not out of my element here. Like, we're both out of our element. This is just not our element. Like, this is just not an element, period. And for him to not feel like he's missed something or didn't figure something out, like, for Cedric to also be like, okay, we need to be on the offensive, I think put him at ease that he wasn't the one to suggest that and say, oh, I don't know what's going on here and I'm afraid. But for the older kid that he's grown to have this like slight bromance with and this admiration for, I think he's like put at ease and grateful that he's not the one who has to lead that charge and that he can kind of rely on Cedric to do that. So I think it's a comfort thing for Harry. He's always the leader. This is an opportunity for him to not have to be that leader and to follow in those footsteps and not have to know what's going on. So I think that is where it kind of comes from for me.
I think that's great. I mean, I think that's a fantastic read. And it probably is very much what she's going for. You know, I wondered if... there was also a part of Harry that, you know, obviously with all he has been through and, of course, what he kind of suspects, I'm sure, about, you know, Voldemort and everything, that he...
I think he feels a bit paranoid.
Yeah, exactly.
Like he's always mm-hmm. this boy who called Wolfman, this paranoid person. And everyone's like, oh, it's Voldemort again. Ha, 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 Harry. And so for him to not have to be that...
Yes.
Cry wolf yep. this time. Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's a relief for him.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it gives him the confidence, you know, okay, if this kid who's older than I am is feeling like this, then I'm not crazy to be feeling like this at this moment. You know, we're in a dangerous situation. And I think what is shocking about this chapter in the sense, not the end of what actually happens and who comes back, but it's just the brutality of it is... we have gone from Harry Potter book to horror movie very quickly because they get approached by a figure that's holding something weird. They can't figure it out. And immediately as it gets closer, Harry's scar it burns with the power of 1,000 suns and he can't even stand up anymore. He's on his knees holding his head. It's so bad. And then he hears this awful voice that says kill the spare. And what I think is awful is that all he hears then is Avada Kedavra and this thud on the ground next to him. Yeah. And it is brutal. It is just brutal.
This whole chapter, I think, nothing to say anything about Daniel Radcliffe or his you know, depiction of Harry Potter in the movies or the direction they took. But in this chapter, I very much so get a frightened, pained child from the book. Harry is now alone. He's witnessed something that's just horrific. He has no idea what's happening. All of it's terrifying. It goes from someone dying to someone cutting off their hand and screaming in pain. And it ranges so much. And it does, it definitely becomes this horror story. And thinking about it from the perspective of like a parent or something like that, like I would never want someone I love to have to experience this. And just to think about his reaction and thinking forward on how some of this is going to just affect him and who he is and how he's going to show up and what that's going to do for his choices in the future, is pretty, it's heavy. This is a heavy seven pages that we read through. And it does, it gets dark very, very quickly. The last book got a little bit dark near the end, but this I think is definitely, venturing into that it's definitely hitting that adult part of the young adult series. Where up until now, I think you could have gotten away with calling it, you know, a youth series. Now you're in young adult for sure.
I like that you reference how this event is going to impact Harry in the future. And this is a real turning point for him, you know, to see somebody else murdered in front of him, you know, and, you know, you put on top of that the trauma of, you know, having last year where he could hear his mother being murdered. It is, I mean, you just think about that and it makes so much sense then. And just a quick aside, I mean, we don't usually jump the timeline, but it makes sense the next book then, why it is such a struggle for Harry to be anything but angry all the time. And so that you're really right. Going to get that. And this is all, I feel like this whole, you know, end of this book is almost the straw that breaks it just breaks Harry. And it will, he will continue to be broken until the end of the next book. Like this is the part where it begins the deconstruction of who Harry Potter is all the way throughout the next book. And then it's not really put back together until, I guess, you know, somewhere in the Half-Blood Prince. So, I mean, it takes a while to bring process. This character full circle. So
yeah, it's interesting too, because this is, I mean, they're, most of the books have had an instance, and I think that the instances have aged along with Harry, where he's sort of forced to grow up older than he really is.
Yeah.
And this is definitely kind of the beginning of that moment for him. And I think it continues on throughout the rest of the book without, you know, spoiling anything for anyone. Shocker, he has to continue growing up, people. Spoilers.
What?
but I really think that this is kind of that pivotal moment for him, and it's really not going from kid to older kid. He's now gone from child to adult. And again, not to speak too much into the future, because we really don't like to do that, but I feel like this moment is really going, this moment, and I'm thinking specifically to where Harry closes his eyes from pain and fear of what's going on around him as Cedric dies. I think that moment is going to speak very loudly to him as we continue on throughout this series, and he's going to struggle with how to process and how to cope with that, which is a very human and real thing to do. So it's a very, very short chapter that is very important and has a lot of weight on the future. Yeah. And I always, just rereading it, I think of it as I think it's the most thematic and dramatic chapter in the book. The seven pages weigh heavily, heavily on what we're going to read from now until the end of the series. So
Harry doesn't even really have time to process much the death that's just happened, because he gets dragged by this figure over to a grave and tied to it. And he notices that the name Tom Riddle is on it, which I'm sure freaks him out because he knows what that name is. And then he realizes it's Wormtail doing this to him. And there's this bundle that Wormtail has been carrying. So as he's being tied to this awful grave so that he can't move, this bundle of robes, Harry's like, it kind of looks like a baby. Do I really want to know what is in that? And he realizes, I don't want to know what is in this bundle. Like, it just right? continues to get creepier and creepier and creepier, and till the voice is like, hurry. And Wormtail keeps going through all these things. He sets up this cauldron, and then we get, and this is the thing that I think is really interesting. I think this is the chapter that begins our understanding of just how wicked and truly evil Voldemort is, because the magic that he is going to use to bring himself back is just so demented. and disturbing. Like, we finally get that. And then, of course, you know, as we do jump in the next chapter, we'll get even more of that because he starts explaining himself. And it's just, what we see then is that Voldemort is the antithesis to who Harry is. And so we really create those stakes in the sand of where these two characters are and who they are and what they're about. And I like that.
You don't just get that they're the antithesis. You get like the extent to which they are these polar antithesis of each other. Like how drastically far apart. Because we know that they're opposites, but now we know how dramatically opposite that they are.
Yeah. And I mean, just what they're doing, the fact that they're here, they're using the bones of his father, the flesh of a servant, you know, who Wormtail chops off his hand. I'm like, couldn't you just like cut off a little bit of skin? Do you need the whole hand? Like, just says flesh, like, right?
They take a little bit of blood. They take one bone from the dad and a little bit of blood from Harry, an entire
hand,
like, upper arm from Wormtail. You're like, the proportions of this seem off.
They do. But I also, what I think it does a good job of showing is in that small little scene, you get a picture of what Voldemort requires from those that follow him here, and then they'll pick that up in the next chapter. But it's another demarcation between those that are quote-unquote friends of Voldemort and those that are friends of Harry. Harry doesn't ask things of his friends like this. You know, like, Harry doesn't, his friends, he is wanting to know how he can help them. And, you know, it's this beautiful reciprocated relationship. Voldemort is all about taking from people and continually asking and never giving. And we see that here with Wormtail. And it is just awful. And then, of course, it's this awful thing rises out of the cauldron. And it's Lord Voldemort. And he is back.
I love, though, that the whole time Harry's like, please let this go wrong. Yeah. Please let it drown. Like, thinking so logically and so very human versus wizardly that, hey, it could drown. I don't know what it is, but I hope it dies. Mm-hmm. Like, he has this just, this very human reaction of like, please let them screw up. Like, please, please let them screw up. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really, really unique because we'll get into it a little bit more in the next chapter. But it, again, is just the difference between Harry and Voldemort. You know, Harry is embracing this human element, this human side and thought process to him. And you'll learn a little bit more about that in the next chapter. And I'm not going to ruin that. So, I do beg the question along the lines of what you were saying of Harry not asking things of people. I do chuckle to myself a little bit when she chooses the words flesh of the servant willingly given. How willingly really was that given? I mean, like, Voldemort didn't cut it off of Wormtail himself, but
I mean, he might as well have, right?
Willingly was the right word there.
Yeah.
Begrudgingly given or something.
Yeah. Well, and it's definitely, you get the sense, like, there's this fear that goes along with it. And so,
intimidated.
I mean, apparently, that's fudgeable, you know.
Willingly can be loosely described.
Yeah, it's a very loose definition, you know. Being very vague with the rules of language here. So, but unfortunately, all this equals is that Lord Voldemort is back, and scarier than ever. So, and. What I do appreciate about this chapter is, again, I think the reason that its length is what it is because she is wanting to allow you to experience this moment without anything else around it other than to see what it is this character is willing to do to bring himself back and how willingly he is and how easy it is for him to discard anything he sees as useless to him, like Cedric, you know, and it creates this pain then because, and I wanted to say this too about this chapter because I was thinking about this today. You know, Rowling has said many times that this is a book about death, and I appreciate in many ways that Cedric's death is so unceremonious, that it is, it's painfully discarded already. You know, we're already past it, and you forget about it because of what's going on now. And it's a, you know, and in many ways, I think it's a good way to show kids that these kind of things are not fair. They happen, you know, like evil people take other people's lives. I don't know how to describe it other than the fact that I think it's well done when we talk about what she I think adds to a person's understanding of how some deaths happen.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I don't think for me I'm forgetting about Cedric's death. I think she's sort of speaking to the ability to still cope, that you can grieve and you can do that, but you don't always have the time to stop and focus on that grief. Yeah. And that you need to be able to sort of compartmentalize a little bit of that and be able to say, okay, I don't even have time to process what just happened there. I have to move on from it. That doesn't mean it's not important. It doesn't mean that it's not significant, but it's not going to be this dramatic death scene where you get 10 minutes of the blood spurting and the cold body falling to, like, you don't get all that, right? Like, you just get him dying and the story moving on past that as if it's just a side note. And so it's a very important and significant event in Harry's life that we get for, you know, a sentence, a sentence worth of consideration. And I think this is the first time that Harry has to be able to say, okay, that happened. I have to think about it later. I have to focus on what's happening now. And I think that's real life. You know, people, sometimes you have the ability to grieve and, you know, feel what you're feeling and function, and sometimes you have to keep moving on in that moment and come back to it later. Usually not because you're being, you know, tormented by a super evil being who's out and hell-bent on destroying you, but, you know, maybe you're, I don't know,
I mean, hopefully that isn't the case for your life,
or got other things going on, you know, maybe hopefully you're not being hunted down by he who shall not be named, but, you know, to each their own. I don't know all your lives, so just know that Matt and I are here for you if you are being
hunted. I mean, if you're being, you know, hunted by he who must not be named, I'm a little worried.
I mean, we should maybe change the name of our station to be more in line with something from the third, but our last book, then, if that was what happens. So we can make that happen, guys. Potter talk can happen, which I'm skipping ahead, but I haven't really ruined anything.
Oh.
We can edit that out if you need to.
No. So I wanted to say something because you brought something to mind that really clicked. Is what I do think that she does a great job is that you experience this chapter through Harry's eyes, and so you know, the death happens, but then there are all of these other things happening, and I feel like so much of this is kind of overwhelming for Harry as it's happening, because, you know, as he sees this awful thin man rise up out of the cauldron and realizes that Lord Voldemort has risen, like, all of his worst fears have come to pass. So it there's this explosion of emotion in Harry that I don't know if he, there's got to be this numbness in him as a character. Like, he doesn't even know how to process everything that's happening. And so I think she does a really good job of that. And I think I will say, you know, in a couple of chapters, what will happen will, she will bring it full circle back around so that Cedric's death has a real meaning and a real, I mean, it'll make you cry. You know, she's going to bring that around. It's not something
she's going to break you all.
Yeah, she's going to break you. But, you know, honestly, that's the end of the chapter. So we kind of have to wait till next week to see what happens now that, this turd bucket is back.
I feel like with Harry, in response to what you were saying about Harry experiencing this rush of emotions, it does say, like, he barely has time to feel numb about what's happening. And I think this next couple chapters are really going to be a true testament to the level of emotional intelligence that Harry brings to the party. We always talk about Ron having the wizarding background and Harry or Hermione being the book smarts and, you know, Harry being sort of this natural talent. And this is his ability to compartmentalize and to not process in the moment, but still respond in a, you know, in a way that's intelligent, which we're going to come to learn more about what that looks like. And in this moment, just for his ability to observe and think through things is unique. Not many full grown adults or capable people are able to handle that level of stress. I mean, military and police and people like that train for years and years to be able to process the level of trauma and stress that he's enduring right now. And to be able to even, I don't know, walk is a big ask. So I think we're really going to see how that all plays out here in the next chapter. And it really sets you up. These seven pages, man, we've talked for 25 minutes about seven pages. I mean, that's an accomplishment all of its own. You know, not a Harry like feat, but maybe a Hermione like feat, but
well, and
I
think you're absolutely right, because again, we see that here, but there is coming a breakdown, you know, where he can't handle it anymore. And it's really beautifully done. You know, I think most people don't respond well to didn't respond well to the Order of the Phoenix, because it is a story about a kid with PTSD, and that's tough. So spoiler alert.
And it's not fun for anybody to read. Like, it's not, you're not like, hey, I want to read this and make myself really uncomfortable. I mean, it's a good read, but it's not something where I'm like, I want a real light and fun read today. Let's read Order of the Phoenix.
Yeah. No, so, but it we'll is move on. What I think it is actually one of the most rewarding reads. But anyway, we're totally jumping the timeline.
We're on the next book, guys.
Sorry about that. Before we just blow it out of the water, Drea.
I know, as we just ruin the rest of the book and the rest of the series.
The series is done.
I will say, though, we have made it 90% of the way through book four before we really went on that
That's
kind of
true.
Tangent. So I'm proud of us.
It's very true. Where can everybody find you if they want to talk about anything that's going on, anything Harry Potter related, if they want to subtly tell you how cool the Fantastic Beasts trailer is? Where can they find you?
So if you're trying to peer pressure me, you can find me on Twitter at PCFchick.
Isn't that what Twitter's for?
Isn't that what Twitter's for? Or on Instagram at Drea Coffman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me here on Twitter, MattRushing02. And then, of course, I'm on Instagram under the same name. I'm also here in the network with good old friend John Mills as we talk about Star Wars every week on Aggressive Negotiations. I am over on the Trek FM network, a couple shows there. I've got Owl Post. I've got The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then I've got the 602 Club. We just actually, a week prior to this, at 200 episodes officially, so check it out. It's the General Geek Show. We talk about everything we can under the sun when it comes to fandoms, you know, anywhere from Star Wars, we've talked about Harry Potter, Bond, The Matrix, I mean, everything in between. And then last but not least, I do a show with my good friend Courtney called Cinema Stories, and that is where we talk about films but through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.